Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Pack Podcast.
The thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Hello, everyone, and Merry Packmas. It is the day after Christmas, which I understand is like one of the biggest days of the year for returning merchandise. I once worked in retail. I do not envy anyone that works in retail these days for this specific day. But that's not what we're here for. I'm your host, Jacob Westendorf. It is Victory Wednesday. The Green Bay Packers defeated the New York Jets in a thrilling overtime victory, 44-38. And joined with me, as always, is Jason Perrone. Jason, how was playing Santa for little JJ?
Well, little JJ is actually in the Midwest right now. I'm in Phoenix. He's in Minnesota, and he got a nice visit from Santa. And we did our Christmas last week, so it was good. Everything was good, but I know that he was equally as excited that the Packers won. I had to remind him the season is still going on. He's checked out a little bit. Poor little guy. It was a good holiday. Merry Christmas to you, my friend. Hope it was a good one. And, yeah, thrilling indeed. Thrilling indeed. It was actually a decent-sized crowd at the bar in Tempe doing the pregame show that I do. But that's also a function of the Packers not being on any of the network's broadcast lists anymore. They aren't showing any of their games, so you either have to go to the bar or try to find another way to watch the game. So it was good. It was very, very good. Ready to get back at it for one more. And then we get into the meat of the offseason.
Meat of the offseason, that's right. We are less than a week away from Black Monday, where some of the suspense of that has been taken out. Mike McCarthy's already been fired. We're going to talk a little bit about the interim head coach during this process because of I'm calling it a clickbait article by resident Vikings fan Mike Florio. But maybe you don't feel the same way. So we'll see how we feel about that. Thrilling weekend for sure. Christmas, I have one story to tell you guys. My mom believes in Santa, so that's funny in and of itself. But in my stocking this year, she gave me some baby wipes, and she gave my wife a ovulation tracker. So I don't think there's a secret as to what she wants for next Christmas. So, Jason, if it works, and it happens to work out, JJ may have a playmate by the time next Christmas comes around. So we're a long ways away from that. But I did think that was funny that that is one of the gifts my mother decided to give us was a pregnancy tracker, essentially. But we don't need to talk about that. I'll talk about my kid on the show enough if and when I finally am fortunate enough to have one. What I want to talk about is Sunday's game, Jason. 44-38, the final. I know how you are. So the first thing I want to ask is, it's 14-0 before we've even blinked. And then it was 21-7, and then it was 35-20. But I want to get to 21-7. The Packers are down 14-0. They go down, and they score a touchdown. Aaron Rodgers throws a touchdown pass. And after that, the Jets take the ensuing kickoff 99 yards for a touchdown. Now, most people are saying fire Ron Zook. Well, duh, I think that's a formality at this stage. There's going to be a new head coach, and there's no way that guy's qualified enough to remain on as the special teams coordinator, especially considering, I mean, that's even starting to get some national media attention, how bad the Packers are on special teams. However, it would have been very easy for this team to fold up the tent and say, all right, forget it. We gave them our best shot at a rebuttal. They answered us right back. And instead, the Packers went into the half down 21-17. Eventually, they were down 35-20. And as I stated, they came back to win the game. My question, Jason, is at 21-7, how easy would it have been for this team to have given up? And what does it say about the leadership of this team, the culture of this team, all the way on down to not only fight back, but to fight back on the road and eventually go win a game?
I was happy with that. I'm not wired to like the Packers losing a game for any reason. I mean, even in the last game of the season last year, I still kind of wanted to see him sneak one out just because, you know, like even in 2011, in that last game of the season, when they'd already lost the game, so the perfect season was over, that wasn't going to happen. They knew they were going to the playoffs. They sat Aaron Rodgers. I remember being in Minnesota at a sports bar, so it's predominantly Vikings fans, and Matt Flynn is playing his balls off against the Detroit Lions, setting records all over the place. But when I left the bar, it looked like the Packers were going to lose. And it wasn't my choice to leave, actually. I know I'm guilty of leaving early, but that actually wasn't my choice. By the time I got home and had enough reception to check the score again, the Packers had won that game. And I screamed in the basement. I remember screaming and running around in the basement like crazy. And it didn't matter. It didn't mean anything. I'm just not wired to like the Packers losing. So I loved what they did and how they fought and who it was that stepped up and provided that example. I want to give a huge shout out because I was a little critical of him at one point during one play in particular, but Tremont Williams, Jake, when he signed, I told you he was going to win a game for this team this year, and I can't say that he's made a specific play that has won this team a game. And in fact, you could argue the opposite. The Minnesota game with the punt, that was a huge gaffe, but he grits it out and comes back. I mean, he supposedly had cut through his tongue. I mean, I can't even imagine how you're playing in a game. I mean, if I bit my cheek mildly, I'd probably sit out. Like, he's out there gritting it out. Huge example of it. Aaron Rodgers, there's no way to argue what Aaron Rodgers did. FedEx Air Player of the Week nominee for the fourth time this season, and very deservedly so, although ironically it was his damage, although that obviously the game-winning touchdown pass was as vintage of a Rodgers throw as it could be. But when it was 21-7, Jake, I was done. I was like, this is it. They're done. They're not, you know, I mean, they're trying to show up and play, but there's just too many things going against them, and these guys don't want to get hurt. And I think we've also almost become conditioned to accept teams lying down. But then we saw what the Packers ended up doing, and we were reminded that this team does have pride. They do have heart. They do want to carry something into next season. These rookie wide receivers grew up a little bit and got on the same page with Rodgers and made some special plays. Equanimeous St. Brown is probably going to be I will tease that I'm going to have to really sit down and think really hard between he and Jaire Alexander for rookie of the year on this team, because he has done way more than I thought that he would. And he's been a blessing, a huge blessing. So I thought it was over. I was fine with it. I was resolved to it, but I'm just not wired to like the loss. And it was exciting. It was an exciting finish. Although I will say some of the flags were a little ticky-tack, but, you know, for once in our lives, and unfortunately it happened when it didn't matter, you know, it's about time that the Packers are the recipient of some of that, I guess.
Yeah, it looks that way. You know, I completely buried the lead there, and I apologize for that. The touchdown pass that I just mentioned that Aaron Rodgers threw was to Whitewater Jesus, Jake Kumerow, to which my brother and I made several jokes following the touchdown, because at that point, we thought that was going to be the highlight of the game, because to that point of the game, even after the kick return, you're thinking, okay, this looks like every road game they've played this year. They either start slow and fall behind, or maybe they'll make this competitive. But ultimately, I mean, we were conditioned to think, especially this year, that this Packers team was going to lose. And I can't blame you if you thought that way, because that's how this game looked. The offense was really sloppy early in the going, and then they make one play. And sometimes, you know, that's the nice part of some of those games, is sometimes one play can be a catalyst for something bigger and better to happen. And that's really what happened. The Packers offense, they kind of stagnated a little bit in the red zone. I'm not going to say they played the perfect offensive game or anything like that, but that really did spark them, because they scored 37 more points after that and really looked like a competent group for the rest of the game. You mentioned the flags. Todd Bowles mentioned those flags after the game. My response to that would be is, Todd, your team had three separate 14-point advantages throughout the course of this game. I'm not trying to hear that crap. You want to blame the officials? Whatever. But your team lost because you had three 14-point leads and you couldn't hold any of them. And that's what happened. So thinking about this way, you mentioned the receivers. I'm going to get into that right now since you brought it up. Equanimeous St. Brown had a huge day, 5 catches, 94 yards. He didn't have a touchdown. He just missed one later, and then he left the game with a concussion. We'll see if he can play this week. The injury report should come out later on today. I'm hopeful he can play. That's one of the guys, you know, we're talking about from the standings perspective, a meaningless game on Sunday. That's somebody has my eye for Sunday, because I want to see if he can build off of that. And you talk about these rookie receivers, Jason, we've kind of talked about it all year. Marquez Valdes-Scantling was kind of the darling there toward the middle of the season. Had a big catch against the Rams. Had a big play against the New England Patriots. He had a chance for a big play last week against Chicago, but largely since that little stretch in the middle of the season, he's been pretty absent. Equanimeous St. Brown has been far and away the best rookie receiver in terms of consistency on this roster. There's no question. Jamon Moore, this year has been a wash for him. There's a story that Jason Wilde wrote today. I recommend you guys read it. But his season has essentially been a lost cause this year. He has not played well when he has gotten an opportunity, and those opportunities have been fewer and further between. He's been passed on the depth chart by Jay Kumaro, who wasn't activated until a couple of weeks ago. So I say all that, Jason. You're looking right now. Devontae Adams is going to be back next year. There's no question about that. Randall Cobb, somebody in our intro, we're going to have to replace that, because Randall Cobb not likely to be back next year. The only way I can see Cobb back is if he makes like $3 million and basically says, okay, let's do a one-year deal for $3 million and let's see what happens next year on the open market, which I can't anticipate being something. I don't even know if the Packers would be interested in that, to be honest with you, but that's about the only scenario I could see Cobb returning. Geronimo Allison's a question mark. And then after that, you've got four young guys. Jamon Moore, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Equanimeous St. Brown, and Jake Kumaro is not really a young guy, but he's a back end of the depth chart type of receiver on this roster right now. How big of a need is this going forward? Did anything that happened on Sunday quell some of your fears about this receiving group going into 2019?
Yeah, I feel a lot better about it after this. It's one game, but I still think that we know what Rodgers is capable of, and if he can make it happen once, he can make it consistent. So I feel a lot better about it, and I'm open to any of these guys coming back. Cobb, my question back to you before I carry on about the receivers, and I'll just ask you for your thoughts real quickly, is it's probably not likely, but if you're going to bring Trevor Davis back, why wouldn't you, if Randall Cobb wanted to, why wouldn't you bring Randall Cobb back and limit his snaps on offense, but let him be your full-time punt returner then? Because then you don't have to worry about losing him on offense. I mean, I know it's not likely to happen, but if that scenario were to play out, are you down with it or not?
Oh, no. I wanted Cobb replaced as the punt returner early in the year. I'd like to see somebody more explosive in that role. Maybe that's Jair Alexander. Maybe it's a rookie receiver they bring in. Maybe it's somebody like that. But I see Randall Cobb. The one thing that I do know about him is when he's back there returning punts, I know he's going to catch the ball. And believe me, because in the preseason, the last 2 or 3 years, they've done some experimenting at punt returner. And that's the time to do it. I totally get it. But nobody could go back there and consistently field the ball, make smart decisions, catch a punt, do those things. And I just would like the Packers to aim a little bit higher than, oh, I know he'll catch it.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess, and it's been a while since I've seen Cobb be a full-time punt returner. My thought is that, you know, the one thing I like about Tremont being back there is that he's probably going to be smart with the football, although the Minnesota game has me leery now forever. And that's the other thing with Cobb is, you know, at least he's going to be smart with the football and he's going to make good decisions. But you're right about the explosiveness. And keep that in mind when we discuss another position of need later and we're talking about veterans versus youth. So the wide receiver position, I love the rookies. Jamon Moore is very curious to me, but I'm not going to give up on him. I'm not going to say that he's going to break out and surprise everybody next year in training camp, but I want to see him get more opportunities. And if there's one reason, another reason why I'm glad that Mike McCarthy isn't divvying up the snaps in the preseason, it's the mentality that McCarthy had that it's so-and-so's turn to play, instead of saying, hey, in this situation, this is a Jamon Moore type of a formation. We need to get him out there. Put him out there and let him play. You know, don't do the stupid Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, well, it's Jamal's turn, it's Aaron's turn crap. Let's see if what we have in Jamon Moore, let's not give up on him. Although, you know, he did get benched for misplaying was it a punt? A kickoff? One of the two. He got benched. He didn't come back and play. Kickoff, yeah. So, obviously, he's got a lot of work to do. You know, raw talent, but he's not. Jake Kumerow is going to be 28 next year. So, okay, listen, if you want him back, he runs a great route. He scored a touchdown. He's a crisp wide receiver, and the quarterback clearly loves him. So, if you want to bring Jake Kumerow back, then you need to ask yourself, anybody, you in a general sense, need to ask yourself, because that's about when you want to sign your veteran free agent if you want to max them out. So if you bring Kumerow back, is there anybody on the open market then that you're okay passing up? Because Kumerow then essentially becomes your you know, 28-year-old wide receiver, or I guess he's your fourth guy on the depth chart, unless he gets bumped up for some reason. I still think Marquez Valdes-Scantling is your clear and away number two, but I'm assuming that he has a healthy and a very productive off season and he continues to improve. And then EQ is your clear slot receiver. They need to get another body or two in the draft. I mean, they definitely should target this position. Now, what they're going to do with their picks, I have no idea. I mean, Jake, you're going to have so much fun with this draft prep process because there's so many things that could happen. And that's another thing we probably should talk about is the frustration and the absolute total angst that I saw on Twitter after the Packers won, because now they're going to lose out on XYZ player in the draft. And there's all kinds of things that are going on and changing by the moment. And it's too early to worry about stuff like that. And again, that's, you know, not to steal Mike McCarthy's phrase, but the loser mentality. Now, interesting thing just now, school. Well, he was probably going to be a top 10 pick. So Andy Herman, one of my colleagues at Cheesehead TV, makes a good point, which is that the Packers are going to probably suffer now, just one draft slot, because a team was probably going to draft him that needed a quarterback. The Packers aren't going to draft a quarterback in the first round, and a skill player would have been there for them that probably now may not be there because whoever that team was is now going to pick a skill player. So there's a lot of things that are going to happen between now and draft time. But wide receivers should still be on the radar. I think just be smart about it. The Packers had success drafting receivers in 2 and 3. So I think you're okay if you want to do that, because you can still get your offensive lineman in the mid rounds and have some success there. So I like the base that they have. I wouldn't mind seeing them get after a veteran if there's one to be had out there either. There's a lot of different things they could do with it.
Yeah, I'm excited about the receivers, but at the same time, I don't want to go into next year counting on those guys that you just mentioned to be major contributors. Jake Kumerow, fine player, great story. I want him as the fifth receiver on my depth chart. He plays special teams, and he comes in the game if somebody's injured. That's not bad depth to have. But adding some quality is not the right term, but somebody who has a higher pedigree of capital to this receiver core can't be a bad thing. The Packers haven't spent a high pick on a wide receiver since Davante Adams. That was a long time ago. Jamon Moore is the most recent one. We've seen how that's worked out, but the Packers definitely do have at least some need, in my opinion, for weapons in this arsenal that Aaron Rodgers has. And that's something where we'll probably know a little bit more about when they hire the head coach, whether that's somebody else or somebody in-house, will kind of know what kind of players they want to have. Equanimeous St. Brown, to me, is the only one I think that should have an inside track and a starting position. That should be as the slot receiver next year. But a lot can change. It's December 26th, guys. Like, the draft isn't for another four solid months. And you brought up your point of how now, oh, you know, the Packers won, so that screws them in draft position. Right now, they'd be picking 14th if the season ended today. And God forbid that that happened, because last year when they picked 14th, they moved around, but they ended up with Jair Alexander. And the joke I've been continuously making to those people is, well, let's be honest, Jair Alexander sucks. He hasn't made any impact whatsoever on his rookie season. So you're right. You can't get a franchise player at 14th overall. Of course, that's a joke. Jair Alexander is going to be one of the finalists for Rookie of the Year this year. But I don't know. I mean, I love the draft. I look at it anytime from once the Packers season ends until April. I think the year-round draft stuff is helpful. But I do think it also has robbed us some of, you know, we're talking about in September guys that we want to draft to replace this dude, that dude, whatever. And you kind of lose sight of some of the process that goes into things. Players getting better, things that you thought were needs maybe aren't needs anymore, those sorts of things. I have a really hard time being upset that the Packers won because of losing one or two draft slots. Plus, the other thing is, you know, I got friends of mine talking about, oh, now they're going to miss out on Ja'Chai Polite from Florida, the pass rusher, or Josh Allen, pass rusher from Kentucky, or name your guy, throw whoever in there, it doesn't matter, whatever name you want, that you think is going to be a high-end pick. Players like that drop all the time. Aaron Donald is the best defensive player in football. He was picked 13th overall because 12 teams ahead of him said, nah, he's too short. That was it. That was the only thing that was wrong with him, was he was too small, quote unquote. And that worked out okay. There's going to be a player who drops. There's going to be players there. I know that, yes, if you are higher in the draft, you have more chances at picking a lot. For example, the team who ends up picking number one overall, and admittedly, I think right now that would be the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals have a chance to pick whoever the hell they want. I understand that. The highest pick in the history of the Green Bay Packers was number two overall. Guess who they picked? They had the pick of anybody in that draft except for Troy Aikman. They could have picked Deion Sanders or Barry Sanders or Derek Thomas. And they picked Tony Mandarich. So, yeah, the guy that you pick does matter, too. Now, I know where matters to some degree, and I understand that. But I'm not going to sit here and say, man, I hope they lose. Now, we can talk about some decisions that have been made. For example, I do not agree with playing Aaron Rodgers in these games. Not because I want them to lose, though. Because these games are essentially preseason games. Glorified scrimmages is the term you like to use, Jason. He makes $134 million over the next four seasons. If he blows his Achilles this Sunday, he will not play until midseason next year.
Well, and one thing to add to that, too, is people just realize that it's not about necessarily taking a hit. Achilles injuries and some injuries can very easily be non-contact, and it's a tough, hard surface out there at Lambeau Field. So to that point, you know, even warming up pregame, we could be in danger. So that's even more ammo to your argument.
Yeah, so, I mean, we can talk about stuff like that. But as far as, like, actually being upset that my favorite team won a game, nah, I'm not buying that. You can give me every which reason that I should be. I won't be. And when the draft hits, maybe they miss on a guy because of that. Okay, cool. Let's be honest, guys. We're talking about all these dudes right now. Everybody in Packers blogosphere is talking about all these dudes right now that they want. And let's be honest. When they pick 14th overall or wherever they end up picking, we're all going to sit there and go, man, this guy could be a player. And we're going to talk ourselves into that pick. I did the same exact thing with Jair Alexander. Turns out I was wrong about him. He is a really good player. I had some concerns about him coming into this draft, and he's been the best corner on the team when he's been on the field. So I got a hard time talking about draft stuff in the middle of the year. The players don't care about draft stuff, so asking them to do so is asinine. For example, saying that, okay, Clay Matthews needs to care about the Packers' draft position. Well, Clay's not stupid. He knows that when they draft this year, they're probably looking at pass rushers. Guess what pass rushers are? Well, really important, but his replacement, that's what they are. Clay's replacement is going to be drafted this year. He knows that. And so asking Clay to care about that or somebody like that in general, release Clay Matthews' name with somebody else, doesn't matter who. I got a hard time telling the players to worry about stuff like that as well. So, no, I was not at all upset with the fact that they won on Sunday. I sit down to watch the Packers win, and that's what I hope they do, and I hope they win on Sunday. Now, I hope they win on Sunday with DeShone Kizer playing quarterback, but that's because I want to protect the franchise. Aaron Rodgers, like you mentioned, he's playing, or he played on Sunday with nothing on the line and could have been sat out for a really long time had he gotten injured. This Sunday, specifically against Detroit, David Bakhtiari pulled up lame during that game. He basically said, and it's a great line. It's awesome to hear that kind of culture, that kind of toughness, this kind of professionalism, where he said, if 12's out there, I'm out there, and I'm gutting it out. Well, if David Bakhtiari can't go, I don't need Aaron Rodgers taking blindside hits from Ziggy Ansah or whoever the Lions pass rushers are. Quite frankly, I don't know a whole lot anymore about them. They're pretty irrelevant in my estimation, so I apologize for the lack of good analysis there. But those guys, I don't need to see Rodgers put in a worse position to get hit, because here's the other thing, Jason, is if Bakhtiari can't go, Jason Spriggs didn't play last week. So your left tackle is probably either Alex Light, an undrafted free agent, or Adam Pankey, also an undrafted free agent that has never played left tackle in an NFL game. I don't need to see that. But to speak specifically about draft stuff and everything like that, guys, there's so much that changes. The people that are telling me players they like now, after the combine, are going to change their opinions on guys. They're going to change their opinions after their pro days. They're going to change opinions after they watch more film. They're going to change opinions for God knows what reason. So I'm rooting for Green Bay to win, but at the same time, I'm rooting for DeShone Kizer to be the quarterback on Sunday for those reasons. And I think there's a difference, but Jason, am I just splitting hairs, or do you want to see Kizer play Sunday as well?
I don't really want to see DeShone Kizer play because when he has, it's been a disaster, and I don't want to have to sit there and watch 3 hours of, I just made up a term, crank football. What does that even mean? I just made it up. But I think you let Aaron Rodgers start because, you know, the one thing I will say, and this is the nostalgic or emotional part of me, this is Lambeau Field. This is the home crowd. You got to give them something to cheer for. And I think Aaron Rodgers being out there rewards them for coming out, supporting the team, being there, even though there's nothing to be gained. It's still Title Town. It's still Green Bay. If you've been to a game there, it's electric before the game, no matter what, just because of the culture in Green Bay. The bars are packed at 6 o'clock in the morning. The entire area around Lambeau is it's one big buffet, and it's a vibe. It's something that I look forward to every single time I go to a game there, regardless of what time of season it is. I've been to Lambeau Field, I think, in every single month possible. And so I've seen all the different weather situations and all the different types of scenarios. I don't think there's anything wrong with Aaron Rodgers going out there and playing. He's a football player. I know there's a huge investment that was made. Sure, he could get hurt. It's not smart from that standpoint, but the team has obviously already made their decision that they're going to let the quarterback determine whether or not he wants to play. So I guess I do want to see Kizer play at least the second half, regardless of what's happening. There's really nothing to be gained. I don't think the Lions are going to come in here looking to run anybody over. I mean, it's Matt Patricia, and yeah, he brings that New England culture with him, and they've got some pride, and they've got, you know, they lost so many games in Lambeau Field for so many years that they want to establish a new normal, but the Lions are in worse shape than the Packers right now. And they've had their starting quarterback all year too, and Matthew Stafford. So I don't think the Packers need to, I don't think they're going to need to play 12 for a full game. So you get Kizer out there for a half and just see what he can do, because you've got to figure out your backup quarterback situation for next season. It just seems like every year, for the last couple of years, there's a moment where we need the backup, or we think we're going to see it, and you need to have somebody steady back there. You know, do you bring in a Josh McCown or a Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, type guy? Not necessarily those guys, or do you stick with Kizer? You know, is Boyle ready to come up? You know, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to – he's been inactive almost every week, you know, so I don't know if we'll see any of him either, if we're talking about this being a true preseason game. But Rodgers starts. He's got to start. It's for the fans. And, you know, Mark Murphy, one of the reasons why I think they let Mike McCarthy go was they looked around at in the Cardinals game. Jacob, you were there. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there were some empty seats. And that's not something that we're used to seeing at Lambeau Field. And that was before the Packers were eliminated. I mean, and they were getting booed. The Packers were getting booed before the game is over. It is very rare for that to happen at Lambeau Field. As much crap as we give the crowds for how much they've changed over the last 20 years and the dynamic of the Packers fan and the season ticket holder, et cetera, has changed. That's not okay. And so I just don't see any way that Rodgers doesn't start the game, just even as a thank you to the fans for hanging in there and to give them something to look forward to for next year, and understanding that, you know, hey, we're going to put our best product out there and we're still going to try and come out and support us and cheer for us. That's it. So best of both worlds, they both play, but obviously we don't want to see Rodgers get hurt.
No, we don't. And to your point, yeah, there was almost an entire section empty during the course of that game. Not so much during the Falcons game, which was strange. Maybe it was because of the swirling wind, or maybe it's because they retired. All those people were tired of the head coach. I don't know. I can't speak for them. But I do know, like you said, yeah, there were some empty seats in the building that day. And I had never seen that. And I went to games last year where Brett Hundley was the starting quarterback. So make of that what you will. So I think we're on the same page. Rodgers is going to start. That's going to happen. I do not want him to play the whole game, especially if David Bakhtiari is banged up. This is one of those games where you're kind of holding your breath the whole time and just hoping that the key players get out healthy. And that's what we're rooting for most of all in this case. Obviously, we want Green Bay to win, but you want health for your guys, because the last thing that the world needs to see, or the crowd, especially for the Packers, is Aaron Rodgers lying on the turf, unable to get up and walk off under his own power on those sorts of things. So I know the Packers are saying all the right things, but at the same time, okay, this is what they feel the best course of action is to let Aaron Rodgers start. That's fine. Make sure he gets out of that game healthy and put him in some bubble wrap, and let's get ready for 2019. Jason, Aaron Rodgers has also been in the news this week for, again, what I'm calling a clickbait article by Joe Philbin. Mike Florio, resident Vikings fan, at Pro Football Talk, but it really means at Pro Minnesota Vikings Talk, just for so everybody's aware. But basically Aaron Rodgers said this week they wanted to give Joe the best chance. And he never explicitly said he wanted him to stay as the head coach or anything like that, but people are taking that and running with it. Is there anything – obviously, the Packers, the worst they're going to finish under Joe Philbin is 500. Is there, you're shaking your head at me right now, so I'm guessing I know the answer to this question. But is there anything Joe Philbin can do, the Packers can do this weekend, to make you say, okay, that's the guy, that's our head coach?
Joe Philbin could turn into someone else. That is his best chance to stay as the head coach of the Green Bay Packers. He was exactly what they needed the rest of this season, but Joe Philbin is not what this team needs in moving forward. They need some fresh perspective, and I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon of I want the youngest, most innovative guy on the planet, or I want Lincoln Riley because 83% of Packers fans say his name because it's a smart thing to say. I don't know who I want to come coach the Packers. The fun part about it is that we haven't been in this situation for – 14 or actually no longer, 14 years. So it's been a minute, and they're going to vet through all of their options. And it's either different things that, I mean, I've seen Lincoln Riley's name floated around out there. I've seen all these different coordinator, you know, Bruce Arians until he didn't want to come to Green Bay. Now I don't remember if it was Peter Bukowski or who it was who opined that, you know, how ironic would it be if Mike Tomlin, if the Steelers missed the playoffs, which is just unbelievable to me, and Mike Tomlin is let go and Mike McCarthy ends up in Pittsburgh coaching the Steelers where he's from. and Mike Tomlin ends up in Green Bay coaching the Packers. And now you have the two coaches who face each other. Yeah, right. Well, I'm not a fan of Mike Tomlin to Green Bay. I'll just say that right now. If his name surfaces, by the way, that was Jacob. Please send your well wishes to him via Twitter. You know, it's just interesting to listen to all the different things that, but I don't want the Packers to rest on or to be, you know, take the fool's gold of, well, hey, we played great these last two games. Maybe we should stick with Joe and moving forward. No. If you really, truly want to, if you fired Mike McCarthy and you were moving on from Mike McCarthy at the end of this season or earlier, it ended up happening earlier, you can't possibly tell me that you're trying to do better if you keep Joe Philbin around. The Packers needed overtime, and there was some questionable officiating to beat a terrible Jets team for their first road win, to go 1-7 on the road all season. And if they beat Detroit in week 17, you beat the Lions at home in the last week of the season, which over the course of the last 30 years is not a huge accomplishment, except for in 2008 when the Packers needed to avoid being the only team to lose to the Lions. And fortunately, they did not. Thank you, Donald Driver. So, no, Joe Philbin, just say no. Big, big red circle with the line through it as far as Joe being a head coach. I wouldn't mind keeping him on staff if he wants to. You know, he was the O-line coach in Indy. I don't know how well he did in that capacity. I just don't want him run. I don't want him at the helm.
I'm with you, and I apologize for throwing up in the middle of the show. But Mike Tomlin, that – listen – you want to hire somebody that you hope is an upgrade to Mike McCarthy, and Mike Tomlin is a downgrade to Mike McCarthy. He's never been a better coach, never has been, never will be. And Mike Tomlin's teams have a very similar pattern to the way that you said Mike – like, everybody says Mike McCarthy's teams had a pattern. Now, they win 12 games. They probably lose a game or two that they shouldn't, and then they'll lose in the playoffs at some point because of one of those games they lost that they shouldn't. Mike Tomlin's gig is they lose one or two games that they shouldn't every year. If the Steelers are playing the Patriots this year, which they did, I can promise you the game before that, the Steelers are either going to lose or they're going to really struggle to win that game because they're always looking ahead to the opponents. Mike Tomlin puts his team on this huge pedestal, completely ignores games, takes games for granted, and then ends up losing that game. And more often than not, gets his ass kicked by the Patriots. Now, that didn't happen this year, but – he followed that up by losing in New Orleans. Now, I'm not going to give him a ton of crap for losing in New Orleans because plenty of teams do that. I mean, New Orleans is one of the toughest places in the NFL to play. It's probably why I'm going to pick the Saints to go to the Super Bowl, because every game the Saints play this year is going to be in that Superdome. That's a tough place to go and win. The Saints have never lost a playoff game in the Superdome with Drew Brees and Sean Payton. However, Mike Tomlin is not the guy. That's not your guy. I would rather them take a chance on somebody, and maybe that doesn't work out. But then to go with the – because Mike Tomlin's probably a safe pick. You know what he is as a head coach. But I can't do it. No way. I've said so many things. I think Mike Tomlin is the most overrated coach in the NFL, and I don't think it's particularly close. So I say all that. We're going to move – Joe Philbin, again, nice guy. I've said this for 4 weeks. The reason I didn't want Mike McCarthy fired during the season was because of this conversation we are having right now. I have no desire to see Joe Philbin as the Packers head coach. It makes no sense to fire Mike McCarthy to hire Mike McCarthy light. If you're going to hire Joe Philbin, you might as well have just kept McCarthy on staff. I got no desire for that. Now, I've given you guys my qualifications that I have for the head coach. I would even be fine with hiring somebody that's a defensive coordinator and checks none of my boxes whatsoever than hire Joe Philbin. And that's no disrespect to Joe Philbin. But I've seen that movie, and it doesn't go very well. So, again, give me somebody else as the head coach. Who that is, I don't know. We're going to find out a lot more starting next week because I'm sure they'll line up some interviews and some things of that nature. So that's where we're at as far as the coaching search goes. Again, I don't think much has changed on the show. We've been pretty adamant. No thank you to Joe Philbin. Jason, the other bit of news today was that the Packers put in a waiver claim, albeit unsuccessful because the Arizona Cardinals suck, but an unsuccessful waiver claim on safety DJ Swearinger, formerly of the Washington Redskins, was released after he openly said he watches more film than the coaches, criticized their defensive coordinator. There's a joke in there somewhere about how the Redskins can't have somebody on their team that criticizes the defensive coordinator, but Reuben Foster is good to go. I'll let you guys make those jokes. I'm sure they've been beaten to death, but there is a joke about that in there somewhere. Jason, the safety position this year, I don't think we came into the year thinking it was a huge need. I think it was a question mark to some degree, but I think we thought that HaHa Clinton Dix would bounce back. I think they were hoping for a leap from Josh Jones, Kentrell Bryce, maybe Josh Jackson plays safety, maybe Tremont Williams plays next to Clinton Dix. And now we're getting at the end of the year, and Clinton Dix has been traded, and Tremont Williams is playing safety next to a lot of guys. Kentrell Bryce didn't play much this past weekend. I don't think he's going to be on the team next year. Josh Jones, I'm telling you guys, Josh Jones was born to be an inside linebacker. Give him that position and let him hunt. Playing him at deep safety, you're asking for trouble. But that's kind of where we're at with the safety position now. We talked about this a little bit on Twitter about whether or not they should claim DJ Swearinger. What was your feeling on that? And then we can kind of have our little back and forth here.
I was not a fan. And when we debated about it originally, it was about the money. And that doesn't – I mean, that didn't – obviously, there's not a lot of evidence to support my take on that because the money is very reasonable. So the team's going to be – the Cardinals are going to be on the hook for about $130K for next week. And then he's, I think, set to make like $5.5 million next season, which for a safety in his late 20s who is capable, that is a very reasonable price. So the Packers felt the same way. What I should have said, and I didn't, was my biggest concern really wasn't the money. It was why is Swearinger on his, you know, X number team. And I think Washington is a disaster. And I actually am more inclined to think that Swearinger was in the right and the Washington maybe tried to make an example of him. And I think that was very foolish, but they've done some very stupid things this season. Reuben Foster, you mentioned, and then Doug Williams, the director of pro personnel or whatever it is, and GM. And then his explanation for it, which was asinine, that, you know, he's on a very short leash. Well, he shouldn't be on any leash because anyway. So I wasn't a huge fan of it, but the Packers obviously felt like there was some value to be had there. The other thing I don't want the Packers to do, I know they won't. You know, this is me speaking as a fan, and obviously the pros are pros for a reason, and I think that this team's got good personnel. And when they bring Reggie McKenzie back this offseason, it's going to get even better. But I just skipped right over that with a straight face, by the way. Yes, I did. But I really do believe in this front office, and I'm really excited about the draft because I think they're going to do really well again. Side note, while I'm ADDing and bunny trailing here, Jacob, you talked about Jair at 14. It was actually Jair at like 17 or 18. So not only did they still get him, but they moved back four spots and they picked up another one. So for those of you complaining, if Green Bay sticks at 14 in the draft, just take a look at this past draft and then go find your favorite beverage and just sit down and be quiet. All right. So Swearinger, you know, he's bouncing around for a reason. I think if he was really solid, you know, he had a couple of picks, but then the scouting report on him is that he's a box guy. He's not a cover guy. The Packers, for the love of God, need a cover safety. They haven't had one in the longest time. They made a mistake with Bryce this year. They thought he was going to be better than he was. He has been abysmal. He was in for, I think, 8 snaps on defense, and he managed to find a way to give up an explosive play during one of those 8 snaps. He is awful. That terrible attempt at tracking the deep pass against the Vikings in week 2, giving up the touchdown to Thielen, he cannot play. He is awful. He's special teams fodder at the most. And the Packers trotted him out there at starting safety every week. And he was terrible. He can't tackle.
Yeah,
he takes terrible angles. He's not good in the open field. Eddie Pleasant, I had no idea Eddie Pleasant was as old as he was. I thought he was an undrafted free agent this year. That's how out of the loop I was. And he's also very, very short. No, he's got to go. He's been awful, and he was terrible again. You think he got blown up on a special teams? He got blown up on the return, I think, that went for a touchdown. this past weekend that they gave up, 99 yards. So the safety position is a mess. The Packers need speed and they need coverability. I looked at the free agent class and there aren't a lot of great cover safeties that are going to be out there. There could be guys that get cut in the change between now and then, but there's not a lot of great free agents out there that are going to fix. So I hope they can find a gem in the draft, I guess is the only thing I could say about that.
Okay. I didn't have a strong opinion on Swearinger one way or the other. Quite frankly, because I haven't watched him play a ton. I know he played and high-fived Taha Clinton-Dix during the Packers-Redskins game earlier in the year this year. That is the extent of Washington Redskins football that I watched this season, and something that I'm trying to do for you guys is I don't want to give an opinion on somebody that I haven't watched play myself. Because, you know, there's so many things people use, and like Pro Football Focus is an example I use. I think it's funny how people use it. Not that it's a bad resource or a good one. I'm not really endorsing it one way or the other, but we'll use that as a reason to sign somebody that we want, but we're also using it to, like, we completely disregard it when they give Aaron Rodgers a negative grade for having 5 touchdown passes in a game, or Taha Clinton-Dix is highly up there in terms of his grades on those things, and we disregard it for that. I just don't want to give an opinion on somebody that I don't know. So I didn't have an opinion on that, but I do know that for the price of $176,000 for the rest of the year, and you get to essentially rent him for about $5 million next year, yeah, that's probably worth a shot to do something like that. As far as the draft class goes, the only one whose name I really know is Deontay Thompson out of Alabama. A lot of people are going to make the Taha Clinton-Dix connection right away. Let me tell you guys right now, not the same kind of player at all. Clinton-Dix, the issues, and I tried to tell you guys about this before the draft that year, for those of you that remember, which most of you probably don't because that was 5 years ago now, but the issues I had with Clinton-Dix was I always wondered, is the sum of the whole greater than its individual parts when it comes to the Alabama defense? I didn't see ball skills. I didn't see instincts. I didn't see those things. And that's why I liked Calvin Pryor more. Now, that didn't go so good either. That safety class has been kind of a bust in general from that perspective. But Deontay Thompson, from the limited study that I've done on him, I think is a very good player. Whether or not he'll be available when Green Bay is on the clock remains to be seen. We just don't know yet. Free agency, you mentioned there's not a lot of good players. And it's not like there's 10 or 12, but there are a couple guys. LaMarcus Joyner's one. Out of Los Angeles, plays for the Rams now. Kind of does for them what Micah Hyde did for the Packers. Lines up all over the place, played slot corner, plays deep safety, those sorts of things. Landon Collins is going to be a popular name. I'm not real keen on that for various reasons, mostly because I think he's more of a box-type safety. Again, I think the Packers have enough of those guys. Trey Boston is another name. The Cardinals signed him for like $3 million last year. That's like next to nothing. And he's a pretty good center field cover type safety. They have a few things going on there. Tyrann Mathieu is a player that's possibly a free agent. He said he wants to stay in Houston. We'll see how their cap situation works out. They also have a few free agents this offseason, including one that I would really like to sign. His name is Jadeveon Clowney. You may have heard of him once or twice. We'll see how all that goes. And then the other big name, perhaps the biggest name, is Earl Thomas, the free safety from Seattle. I would like to sign him solely – well, not solely, obviously. He's a very good player. But the biggest endorsement I can get is him giving the Seahawks sideline the middle finger in his final game, because that's exactly how I feel about that franchise, exactly how I feel about that head coach. The medicals would have to check out. There's definitely some questions there. He's coming off a broken leg. He's had 2 big leg injuries. He's had some issues staying on the field. He's a physical player. That's kind of what happens to physical players. They get hurt from time to time, especially when they're playing a physical sport like football. But Earl Thomas is the best free safety I have ever seen play, personally. Now, granted, that doesn't span back a very long time, but he's very, very good. And that's somebody I think the Packers could definitely be in on this offseason. Jason, I mentioned a few of those free agents. Are there any of those names that catch your eye real quick before we move forward?
Well, there's one that catches my eye, and it's the Earl Thomas conversation, and I don't get it. I just don't understand it. He's coming off of a second major leg injury, and I've seen people come back to me and say it was a clean break, and it's Earl Thomas, and he's still better than what they have. Yes, he's better than what they have, but that's not difficult. We just broke down what they had, and it was next to nothing. And I think, you know, the stray cat in your backyard was mentioned as one of the on the depth chart at safety. So don't get caught up in that Earl Thomas is the end-all, be-all because of his name and what he has done. What does he still have to offer? If it was literally this roster was airtight and safety was the only piece that was needed, you know, I mean, if you already had a strong safety back there, like, I mean, Nick Collins is a generational talent, so that's tough to throw out there. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a scenario in which Earl Thomas would make sense. He's going to want too much money for what he's probably able to provide at this point. He also wants to play for – I mean, he likes Dallas. He played in Texas. He played his college ball at UT. Probably wants to stay in Dallas and be with the Cowboys. So I don't think it's very likely. I don't see them going that route. Landon Collins, the thing that I said with regards to coverage, it's they've got to be good in coverage. They've got to be good cover safeties if there is such a thing anymore. I don't know that Landon Collins is necessarily that. So they might have a lot of work to do at safety. You mentioned Josh Jackson earlier, and the one thing I'll say about Jackson and like moving him into that like middle linebacker type role is what are you going to do with Oren Burks? Because I still want Oren Burks to be that guy. And then that might open the door for Jackson for them to take a look at him in a pure safety role. I would not hate that. I would love for the Packers to finally let the light bulb click and go off and say, this guy's a safety. Let's put him at safety beyond 35-year-old Tremont Williams. Like, take the young guy and move him back to safety. He's a meathead, and that's one of the reasons why I think he's gone. But if they had done that with Demarius Randle 2 or 3 years into his career, maybe things turn out a little bit differently. I don't know. I still thought he was okay at corner, but not great. So Earl Thomas, that's a namesake. It's going to be very expensive. I say pass on that. I think there's going to be more movement between now. I would rather have Eric Berry than Earl Thomas for whatever that's worth. And Eric Berry, I don't think is anywhere. I don't think he's close to being a free. I think he's locked up for a while in KC. But that's just my take on the whole thing. They've got to find a guy that can cover back there and cover deep. I'm tired of watching them get beat over the top, and they've got to be able to find a safety that can take the ball away. We haven't had that since Collins.
No, they haven't. And that'll be a discussion that we can get into a lot more in depth when we do our off-season shows. Jason, I actually have some ideas. We can discuss how we can do some more off-season stuff, because I know in recent years, you've been pretty open as far as I'm not a draft Nick. So that is what it is. So we'll figure those things out as we go forward. Jason, we don't have a whole lot of time left. The first thing I just want to mention is the Packers play the Lions on Sunday. I'm sure that you know that by now. Just a quick response here, since we don't have a ton of time. Who wins and why?
The Packers win because it's the last week of the season. It's snowy and it's in Green Bay, and the Lions suck.
That's fair. Does Matt Prater miss any field goals?
Oh, please no. Please know that if Matt Prater misses a field goal, all right, I got to make a promise. If Matt Prater misses a field goal, I will post a video celebration of myself, and I will do something very incriminating and foolish and entertaining for the rest of you. Jacob, you're a witness. That's Jacob clapping. He's got this huge shit-eating grin on his face. Can I say that on the air? So anyway, no, that would only be the most amazing late Christmas present that I could possibly acquire.
Yes, friend of the show, Matt Prater, will be kicking field goals at Lambeau Field this Sunday. I don't really have a feel for this game. I know the Packers are big favorites. The only reason I don't have a feel is just because I don't know. I would imagine Rodgers is going to start and finish, but I can see a scenario where they don't let him. Assuming he starts and finishes, I say Green Bay wins as well. It's Detroit. It's on the road. Or it's at home for Green Bay's sake. Detroit's on the road. Aaron Rodgers is starting. I think Green Bay wins. I think it'll be one of those games that's kind of depressing, and it'll be a nice farewell, hopefully. I'm rooting for Randall Cobb and Clay Matthews if they are able to play. Matthews should. Cobb, we don't know. To be able to play. Jason, you're putting a finger at
me. Let's not forget, too, if you were going to mention, I'm sorry, I don't want to steal your thunder, but I want to make sure it does get mentioned. This is a, you know, this is a pretty cool thing because I watched a lot of Green Bay Packers teams in the 80s, and I watched Sterling Sharpe play, and his career was cut short way, way, way too soon. But Sharpe is currently your career or your Packers record holder in receptions in a season, and Devontae Adams needs only two to eclipse that mark, and he will absolutely do that this Sunday, and I am very excited to be able to watch it. And for Adams, especially for where he was 3 years ago to today, there were a lot of people that wanted him run out of town. There was somebody whose Twitter handle had Jeff Janis over Adams, and now he's poised to set the career, not career, but the single-season touchdown or not touchdown, receptions, Mark. I'll get my facts straight at some point. He has an outside chance. I think he needs just over 150 yards to catch Nelson's 2014 yards, Mark. So he could do it if he has a real, real big day on Sunday, but big kudos to Devontae Adams.
Poor Derek. I've actually met that guy. He's a really nice dude, but damn, that was a bad take. but that is what it is. We all have him, I'm sure. Jason just said he wanted Josh Jackson, my son, to play safety, so... No, I'm kidding. We're out of time. Like I said, I mentioned I think Green Bay wins, and it's the final run for Randall Cobb and Clay Matthews, so I'm rooting for those guys to play well. That's kind of the biggest thing I'm looking for this weekend. But that will do it for this edition of Pulse of the Pack, the final one during the regular season. We will recap the game and post-Black Monday happenings next week. Be sure to check out Packers.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. Follow the show on to follow Jason. He's at Jason Perrone. You can follow me. I am at Jacob Westendorf. Want to wish everybody, again, a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, whatever it is you celebrate. We all celebrate the new year starting next week. So I want to wish everybody a really, really good transition into 2019. Thank you guys for listening to us all year long. Packers, Lions, Sunday, noon, Lambeau Field. One last run for this version of the Green Bay Packers. We both like Green Bay to win and send the season out on a high note. Thank you guys, as always, for listening to Pulse of the Packs.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.